Hey everybody, welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate the movies. I am your host, Jay Light. Joining me today from illustrious Burbank, California, my favorite sleeper city, Alex Alche.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. And you're absolutely right. Burbank is a hidden gem in LA. People are scared to move here, but anybody joining us in the LA area, take a peek at Burbank.
It's the entertainment capital of the world.
You're absolutely right.
It's the former home of The Tonight Show. It's the former home of Conan. It's got ABC, Disney, Warner's out there, the Smokehouse.
The Smokehouse has been there since, I think, before LA was conceived. The Smokehouse was there, right?
Yeah, I think so. I remember I used to watch a lot of, in college, I took one of my requisite Netflix binge watches was Larry Sanders Show.
Oh, hell yeah.
And, of course, Hank talks about going to the Smokehouse all the time on that show. And then I moved out to L.A. after I graduated, and I saw the Smokehouse for the first time. I was like, oh, it's real.
Yeah. Have you eaten there?
Yeah.
It's not great, but I loved it.
They have garlic bread, and that's – you can't – if a place is famous for its garlic bread, it's not really
– I'm going to go. I'm curious. Famous garlic bread's always intriguing.
Yeah. It's just garlic bread. It's like Texas toast, frozen aisle garlic bread. But you know what? I like it.
Ditto.
All right, Alex. You and I are very we're on the same page about this movie that you wanted to talk about today. And I think you came to it much earlier than I did. I never saw this movie in theaters. I didn't see it early on. You did. I am very excited to talk about this with you today. This movie is Joy. One letter off from my name, way worse than anything I think I've ever created. Hopefully.
You might be right. Yeah, I came to this movie. I was a huge David O. Russell fan for a long, long time. I'm a Silver Linings truth. There are a lot of people who are anti-Silver Linings. Big fan. Love The Fighter. And I was pumped for Joy. I'm also Team J-Law, which is not, you know, something everybody's on. I think Jennifer Lawrence is pretty damn good. So I was pumped for Joy. Saw it in theaters, and 10 minutes in, I turned to my friend Ben, who actually connected us, and was like, what the hell are we watching? Why are we here? And it was a rough go. And then to try to alleviate that pressure, to try to alleviate the pain of watching that movie, we went to, immediately after, try to go see Hateful Eight, and it was just not the right setting to go see a three-hour Tarantino Western watching Joy. So it was a rough night. So yeah, Joy, it was tough.
I can imagine, especially because like I haven't seen Hateful Eight still. That's one of the only Tarantino films I haven't seen. But tonally, I can only imagine that like a locked room, like Western Agatha Christie kind of riff is way different than this movie, which is chaotic and very oddly paced and all over the place. It felt one of the earliest notes that I wrote down when I watched it was that it felt like a shitty Safdie Brothers movie.
That's incredibly accurate. They tried to make tension where there is none. It was wild. Absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't work the way that it's conceived now. It, by any stretch of the imagination, Jennifer Lawrence is 25 when she's shooting this. She's got two kids and like is supposed to be a divorcee.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing?
Who knows?
Just like the conception of it alone is insane, because David O. Russell should not be directing this movie, should not have written or stolen the script from a female writer to make this movie also, which is such a mind blow to me.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. It's very, it's so hard to pin down, I think. I can't pin down one problem with it because it is riddled with problems. Like I watched it and I felt the same way from that jump with the first 10 minutes where like For me, I'm not sure what it was for you, and I'm curious, but for me, the first thing that turned me off was the music.
Oh my God, yeah.
The soundtrack having all these weird needle drops cascading over one another. The editing of it is very strange. I didn't know why they had these choices where it's like you're playing, all of a sudden you got like an Alabama Shake song coming in, faded in over some dialogue, and then you cycle it back to like a weird classical. It just didn't, like, none of it felt right. None of it made sense.
No, nothing made sense in terms of the soundscape in this movie, including the narration. I think the narration might be the worst part of this entire movie. For some reason, the grandma, who's barely in this film, like, is narrating this movie.
Oh, yeah.
About her granddaughter. And one of the first lines of the entire movie, I think, is like, some people love to make things. Joy was one of those people that rejoiced in making things. And I was like, how did that make this script? How did that make the edit? Who decided this was okay? So from like the first 5 minutes, between the music, between the weird like David O. Russell like swooping like push-ins that he does that are just like totally jarring in this movie that make no sense for this type of film.
Mm-hmm.
And the narration, within that first 5 minutes, I was like, this might be the worst movie I see ever. It's not, but it's very bad.
It's definitely not the worst movie I've ever seen, but no. It just doesn't feel right. Especially when you know that you're watching a movie that has prestige written all over it, right? It's got David O. Russell basically at the top of his game. This is, you know, right after Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle. Jennifer Lawrence, same deal. Bradley Cooper, his careers, all these people have peaking careers. Everybody has loved their work so far, you know, and now we're watching this movie that just feels like too chaotic and also emotionally hollow. Like I couldn't connect to any of the characters, really. I didn't like pretty much anybody in the movie, and except for Joy as a character, but even Joy feels like there's something not quite right. There's something off about the way, and I now that you mention it, the age thing of Jennifer Lawrence being clearly a much younger person than the real Joy, like that really actually throws a wrench into the works.
100%. And I think at the time when the casting was decided, people were like, what? Because I believe that the real Joy, and again, this is like a massive interpretation of like what actually happened, but apparently the real Joy was like in her 40s when all this went down. Like this was not like a woman in her 20s trying to figure it out and like invention after invention. No, she was like in her 40s, a mom, like really doing her best to like, you know, be okay. Uh-huh. And that we didn't get that feel at all. We got this weird, disjointed family. You know, some fun things with Robert De Niro here and there, but you're constantly like, why is everyone in every scene in this movie? That's a David O. Russell trope that doesn't work for this movie. Yeah. Everyone of the characters is in any big set piece, and it makes no sense.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It's like it's a trope. It feels very like Greek chorus-y, but this movie doesn't need that.
No. It needs like it. What did this movie need? That's a
segue. Real good question. I mean, the first thing that I thought this movie could need was if every person, because a lot of the characters in the movie are detractors for Joy. They are all not necessarily antagonists, but they are antagonistic. You know, his the dad, Robert De Niro, is you know, he's a piece of shit almost the whole time.
Yep.
The mom is this paranoid, confined to her bed, watching soap operas lady who's afraid of everything and everybody. Her sister
hates her.
Just like, hates her. Absolutely for no hates her.
Yeah. Just because she's a little bit smarter than her and like has ideas.
Yeah. Everybody who's anywhere close to like villainous in this movie is so cartoonishly mean to DeJoy. I think if, like, if this movie wasn't supposed to be a prestige awards bait kind of drama, I feel like that would work. I feel like you could have, and maybe even if David O. Russell wasn't directing it, if you had like a somebody who understood how to play the campiness right, where clearly there's, we're supposed to be drawing parallels between what's going on in the soap opera world and what's going on in Joy's real life.
Oh my God. That soap opera world, though, is such a foolish tactic in this movie. I don't think it works at all.
I don't think it does either. I think that it only serves to highlight how different what we're seeing in the movie versus what we're seeing in that soap opera world is. Like, if the actual movie was played more like the soap opera, I feel like it would work.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if it had that level of campiness and winking at the audience to it, then it would work. But it's not, it doesn't have that. Instead, we're playing, everything is like, all right, this is going to be, we're making this, this is a film, a capital F film, and we're going to make sure everybody who's in it is really coming in at the top of their game. But the top of their game is cartoonish and it buffoonish, and it doesn't feel like it fits with where the movie is trying to go.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Going back to the, like, devoid of emotion that this movie has, there's easy ways to make this movie pop in on an emotional level if they chose to, like, connect the mother to any sort of groundedness in any sort of way. Like, she's a empathetic character. She's a character who's literally bedridden and, like, afraid of the world, falls in love with their handyman out of left field named Toussaint. Thank you, a French guy, for no reason. Why? Yep. I don't know. It's probably real, which, like, is funny and interesting. But, like, if she connected to Joy at one point in this movie, just at one point in this movie, or just, like, said, like, I'm proud of you, Joy, at one point in this movie, the movie works probably, like, 8% better.
Yeah.
But we don't get any of that.
We don't get any of that. We don't get anybody patting Joy on the back, which I guess is, I don't know. I mean, we eventually do get somebody patting Joy on the back and Bradley Cooper, who also feels miscast in this movie. Like, yep. I get wanting to, from a director's standpoint, wanting to keep using your muses and the people who've worked well with in the past.
Sure.
But it seems like a real misfire to cast Bradley Cooper as this QVC exec. He just doesn't feel like the right person to play this role.
That's the biggest thing about this entire movie. Like, I would say the only person who is correctly cast is De Niro in the main four roles. De Niro's correct in this movie. And you have great actors in Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence who can play the role, but this is a studio film. Cast the right people for the role. Like, just because I can act like an Italian doesn't mean I should be playing Italian. I'm very Jewish. Like, it's not going to happen. Same way Jennifer Lawrence shouldn't be playing a 40-year-old divorcee at 25. It just shouldn't happen.
Right. It made sense. Look, Jennifer Lawrence, I'm with you in Jennifer Lawrence camp, all right? Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is a really good actress. She's had some bad, choices role-wise over the years. You know, one of the earliest episodes I did of the show is Red Sparrow, and I think she totally blew it with Red Sparrow, which it felt like such a, anyway, that's a whole other episode. But I think, but like largely I've appreciated the work that Jennifer Lawrence has done. I think she's great in Silver Linings Playbook. I think she's great in Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
But in this, it just, like, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel right for her to be playing a 40-year-old divorcee. And I think in that same note, it doesn't feel right for Bradley Cooper, who I think exudes a lot of warmth and plays somebody very well, like a certain type of character very well. Mm-hmm. This character who he's playing, it's not in his wheelhouse. He's an actor. He should be able to play this role. But it feels like if they had cast somebody who it made more sense to play this kind of character, who's like sort of a, you want them to be sort of a shitty exec. You don't want somebody who's like necessarily championing her begrudgingly to feel like he's in her corner the entire time. And also to be playing it completely flat anytime he is like, this is how the business works.
Right.
He's just like, yeah, this is how it goes. So sometimes, you know, people don't buy a thing, but sometimes people buy a thing. It is what it is.
Right.
It's too matter of fact.
It's so matter of fact. And, you know, the fact that he gives her another chance, like, after making it seem like there's no way you get one shot and one, like, that stuff doesn't make much sense to me. But also, like, I think it would have been a way more, I think there's an issue with the writing, too, with his character of, like, why is he sweet all the time? Why does he care so much? Does he have anything beyond this? Like, there's nothing other than, like, what he does at QVC. Uh-huh. And he's just so invested in it. So he loves it so much. And you're just like, that's not real either. But I think it would have been way more interesting if he was a villainous character who, like, had to be turned by her a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there was, again, there was none of that. Everything in this movie is so matter of fact, so, like, face value is, there's no subtext in this movie.
There's no subtext.
Almost none.
Everything happens on the face, and we are told how to feel the entire way through. Our hand is held by the dialogue and by the direction with the cinematography. Like, I, one of the parts of the movie that I actually really liked was anything that happened at QVC in terms of, like, the framing of shots, the camera movement, the tracking shots. I thought all of those worked at QVC because it felt like it was a very different world than what Joy was used to. So if we're getting this sort of more, like, slick feeling to the television world, I think it makes sense. But
yeah,
you can't have that also take place throughout the entire movie. Like, you need to have, from a directing standpoint, you need to have that delineation of this is what Joy's world is like outside, and then this is what Joy's world is like in QVC when she's getting into the big games.
Yeah, and there, again, was all of that throughout the entire movie. There was constant stylization that didn't need to happen. The random musical scene between her and her ex-husband.
Oh, yeah.
What are we doing, David O. Russell? Why does everything have to turn into some kind of a musical for him? There has to be some grandiose experience for him. And he did not set that up at all in this movie, because the whole movie is supposed to be this. If he designed the movie to be flat, emotionless, like, uninteresting, and then triumphant at the end, like, I get the construction of that. But then to, like, plug in these little attempts at emotion, attempts mm-hmm. at sentimentality that completely fall flat too, it just doesn't work.
Right. It just felt out of place. It just felt like we're watching too many different movies. It felt like stuff was stitched together. One of the things that I actually do think would fix this movie is if it wasn't a movie, if it was a TV show instead.
Totally.
You
can really build out the characters. You can really build out the structure of this movie. You can have the origin story be the whole first season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be way more interesting.
Yeah. I think it would have been so much better if it was, even if it wasn't like a full multi-season show, which I do think there's plenty of room for. But I think that even if you just took the time to give more setup, let the things change and evolve over time and not just have everything come together all at once and it feels at once too tidy and too chaotic.
Absolutely. Also, there are three clear endings in this movie. Three. Mm-hmm. One where she finally gets the idea, like, gets the ability to be on QVC. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's like a slow pushing on Bradley Cooper basically being like, here are the keys. And you're like, all right, this is the end of the movie. And then you look at it and it's like an hour and five in and you're like, what the fuck are they going to do for the rest of this movie? And then, like, 20 minutes later, the second ending is when it's, like, 50,000 calls. And they're like, oh, my God, this movie's over. Triumphant. And an hour and a half movie? Perfect. All right. An hour and a half. I can live with this movie being an hour and a half. And then you look again, and you're like, there's 38 more minutes of this movie. And then the third ending, which is, like, easily the worst ending of the movie, is her cutting her hair and her having, like, the badass new haircut with the leather jacket.
Yeah.
And, like, if that was 38 minutes earlier, maybe that ending would have, like, made me feel like this movie could be saved. But I was like, this is after two false endings. And you did, like, the classic, like, she's doing the come up haircut. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that ending too, I also, like, So the haircut thing, I was like, okay, I guess this is where we're going. And then to have the whole sequence happen after that, where she's at the hotel in Dallas and she's talking to the cowboy hat, bolo tie exec,
yep,
who's been fucking her over this whole time. And an opportunity for there to be a stylized, shown conversation between her talking to the guy in Hong Kong and her making this journey is totally squandered. And instead we get this weird, tidy, like, I had this conversation with this guy and he said, you're wrong, so fuck you and give me more money. And it just doesn't feel right. It feels like it's another a huge missed opportunity. Everything comes together too easily and too neatly. And it's all, I feel like at that point, David O. Russell like gave up.
100%. I think that that is a byproduct of him not knowing this story inside and out, him stealing a script from Annie Mumolo and making it his own weird stylization. And if she was actually still writing that movie, she's a freaking genius. She's also a comedic genius. So everything that we've been talking about, I mm-hmm. think, would have been saved had Annie Mumolo been heavily involved in the script from pre to post.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I'm interested, because I actually don't know a whole lot about the whole the script side of the movie. I remember being surprised to see Annie Mumolo's name in the credits, because I had no idea she was involved with this at all. Do you know what happened, how that all went down?
So there's very little. It came out recently, but from what I gleaned from like Variety and Deadline and whatnot, was she wrote the script. She brought the script. It was supposed to be her script. And then David O. Russell essentially and the studio took it, bought it from her, and then mm-hmm. changed it dramatically, didn't consult her on it, and gave her a story by credit instead of written by. So things changed dramatically, I would imagine, from the inception of that script to what we saw on the screen.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I feel like there's the crazy thing to me is that like I know there's a story here. I recognize that there's a story here, and I think that it's I would love to see what Annie Mumolo's original script was like, because I feel like there's so much to the story of Joy, and there's so much every once in a while you see a twinge of it in this movie where you can see, okay, this is clearly supposed to be a story about somebody fighting for their dream and trying to overcome the odds and learning how to like to evolve and grow and become their own person and leave all of these other anchors behind of, you know, ex-husband having a better relationship, eventually have a better relationship with them, finding a way to have a better relationship with your family. All of that stuff is there. Those seeds are planted. But they, instead of having like room to grow, they all just get trampled on and David O. Russell throws his own seeds into the mix, and it just becomes this weird hybrid garden that it's sure it's like it's pretty to look at, but it doesn't really have any substance to it.
Yep, that's nailed it on the head. I mean, that's exactly what it feels like. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I'm super curious to see what Annie Mumolo's script was like as well. But she came out recently in this art. This is like a very recent thing, so clearly she still is slightly bitter about it, and deservedly so. And there's the biggest thing to me, keep going back to the David O. Russell thing, is like if he came out in 2021 saying, I'm directing Joy, a story about female empowerment, a story about breaking the odds for women, people would rake him through the coals. The fact that this was 7 years ago mm-hmm. or when he filmed this, like, there's no reason for him to be making this movie. This should be a female-led movie through and through, in front and behind the camera.
Yeah, it should have been. I think there's so many great female directors who could have,
oh my God,
done fantastic things with this movie. You could have gone the comedy route. You could have gone the drama route. And instead, they just let David O. Russell do it. And then
here we are.
Here we are.
I mean, here we are with a Jennifer Lawrence Oscar nomination somehow, but here we are.
Somehow. I just don't know. I like, yeah, how did she get nominated for an Oscar for this movie?
She won the Golden Globe, first of all, which is insane.
For comedy or musical, at least. Not for drama, thankfully.
That's also the most fascinating thing, too. This movie is not funny. This movie has no comedy. I did not laugh a single time. I think I may have like slightly tittered at De Niro at one point, but that was really it. Overall, this movie is devoid of comedy and devoid of emotion, and yet Jennifer Lawrence nominated for an Oscar. It was a weaker year, I'll give her that, and she's solid in it. Like, she's always good, but this is like a layup for her. She didn't really act in this movie.
No. It's so... I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's too straightforward. It's not really acting. She's just showing up and saying the lines and looking around wondrously every once in a while. And it could have been, there's just so many missed opportunities in this movie, man. It just feels like I want to see a good version of this. Like, I'm not sure, besides recasting stuff, what the best way to fix it is. But I mean, that's a good place to start, I think.
Yeah, yeah. What to fix.
Have a better director in there.
Yeah, director.
I mean, and not a better director. I think David O. Russell's a fine director. I just don't think it works here.
Have the right director in there. Have, you know, who directed Promising Young Woman?
Oh, Emerald Fennell.
She would have crushed this movie.
She would have crushed it. She would have been great. I think if we had, I'm looking up female directors now, because unfortunately all the ones, because I'm trying to think of ones that were working at the time and all the ones that I'm thinking of now.
I mean, I think it would have been cool to see Catherine Bigelow direct something like this. Like,
Catherine Bigelow would be great.
You know, she does big action pieces, but I think it'd be really cool to see her do like a fun, interesting drama.
Yeah. I think it would have been interesting to see like a Sofia Coppola take on this.
Oh my God, yes. Sofia Coppola. I'm a huge Sofia Coppola fan, so yes, sign me up.
Yes. Ava DuVernay would be a great director for this.
Unbelievably good. And you'd actually get like an interesting perspective behind the camera.
Mm-hmm. You'd finally have somebody who actually understands it with any of these options. Somebody who understands proper way to show female empowerment.
Right, who also had to do what Joy did, essentially. Yeah. Come up from nothing, show that you can do it, and then boom. Endless options, I think, in the female director sphere that David O. Russell had no business directing this.
It's so... I mean, honestly, you could have even had, like, somebody from Shark Tank. You could have had, like, Barbara Corcoran or Laurie Grenier direct this movie. Like, get Laurie in there. She made QVC part of what it is now. Why not have her direct it?
Why not?
Throw her a flyer.
She would have loved it.
Yeah.
She would have loved it. At the same time, like, yes, directing is one thing. There's also, like, we've been talking about these tidy endings that they keep coming up with. So at the same time, it almost needed to be, like, a half hour shorter or a half hour longer.
For There's sure.
The 2 hour and 4 minute mark is like a foolish place to end a movie. Mm-hmm. Because at that point you're like, okay, either this was too long, you dragged this on, we built this out, the denouement was BS, or we need more to actually see what's going on with these people instead of these tidy endings.
It's not right. It doesn't feel like we are given enough time to really appreciate the journey that the movie takes. And I wish that if I were to pick anything, I've been noticing more and more lately that there are, and especially in bad movies, there are plenty of chances for the more interesting movie within this to be revealed and to be highlight. And I think that if the focus was narrowed more on Joy's time at QVC and some of that other stuff, you know, obviously we need to see some of her inspiration for designing the product, right? We need to see that in order to understand why it's so important for her to succeed. We don't necessarily need all this other stuff where she's like fighting patent trolls and people who are fucking her over on the manufacturing. It's unnecessary. Like, I get why it's in the movie, but it doesn't need to be in the movie to convey the same message that we're trying to get across.
Exactly. We also have references to these higher ups in QVC consistently. Bradley Cooper's talking about his boss, and I'm in the lawyer meeting, and I'm in this. And we don't meet any of those characters who could be foils for Joy constantly, which would make for, like you said, I think miniseries or even like seasons of drama. Like, the come up is just like the first half of that season, you know, and then how does she maintain it is, I think, a way more interesting story, especially like, are you a one hit wonder with a mop or can you actually continue to do this? Like, I just think that that's an interesting, way more interesting story.
This movie should have been called One Hit Wonder with a Mop.
Right. Then I would have, then it would have made
totally watched that. I know what I'm getting into.
It also made, it did still do well. Like it still made like $100 million at the box office or something like that. So
yeah, like, on a 60 something million dollar budget, which is pretty, I mean, it's pretty fucking solid, but it's, I mean, it got a B plus on CinemaScore. People loved it coming out of the theater.
I don't know if people did they? Oh my God.
I mean, here's the thing is like audience scores. I can never trust the audience score because audiences are stupid.
Agreed.
I love and hate audiences.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I think that this movie is definitely, it's a curious piece of filmmaking. It's got some interesting stuff, but it just doesn't feel right. Is there something else that you think people should watch instead of this that maybe gets what this movie was trying to do and does it correctly instead of gumming up the works with too much David O. Russell-iness?
Man, that's a good question. It's tough. That like female empowerment story is tough to really nail down. The like coming from nothing to something is always like, it's a tricky business to find that like sweet spot of like, I believe that this is real. I believe that like, this is like emotionally interesting. The characters are full and not just archetypes. Like that's a tricky, tricky dance. I mean, I can tell you something that didn't work either. That should have also been like the series. Like it's way easier to say that than it is to like define. I mean, do you have one? Because it's hard.
No, I mean, it's like I can't picture. I mean, one of the things I've heard Hidden Figures is really good and does this kind of story.
Hidden Figures
correct,
is solid. That's a good one. Hidden Figures is good and definitely one that I would recommend. Yeah, I saw that on my second date with my wife in the great date movie.
Nice.
But yeah, that's a great example of it. Of a good, like, coming up, female empowerment, you know, definitely done well. Also, like, science is also just something that's way more interesting than mops. So, like, yeah, that's probably going to work a little better. So
if the story wasn't about mops and was actually about the entrepreneurial spirit, I would have loved this movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Aaron Brockovich is, like, one that, like, definitely is in that same vein.
I've never seen it. I'm going to look
up. You got to see Aaron Brockovich, man.
I'm looking up films about women in the United States, but there's really, the category on Wikipedia is pretty bad. Like this is what the subcategories on the films about women in the United States page says. They have five subcategories: biographical films about Ma Barker, films about Eileen Wuornos,
perfect.
Monster. Now that's a female empowerment story.
It sure is.
I mean, actually, you know what? Great female empowerment story. Totally different vein than this, but Mad Max Fury Road.
Excellent movie and definitely in that same like spirit, I guess, of what Joy was going for. But yeah, way different movie. Way better movie.
Way better movie. And from the same year, it's a shocker that Charlize Theron did not get nominated for any awards for her performance.
And that was Jennifer a massive Lawrence snub. Yeah, yeah. Massive, massive snub. Just because she doesn't speak doesn't mean she's not unbelievable. Devil Wears Prada. Devil Wears Prada.
Ooh, I've never seen Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, man.
Look, dude, I got a lot of blind spots, okay? All right, Alex? I got some problems.
Well, I didn't want to do this to you today, but yeah, let's watch Devil Wears Prada, man. It's a fantastic film. I'll defend that movie any day of the week if anybody has anything to hate on it.
I feel like people don't have anything to hate about Devil Wears Prada. I mean, I could be wrong. If somebody is hating Devil Wears Prada, please let me know.
But that's all about like female empowerment, nothing to something, didn't know that she wanted to do anything with her life to like being a mogul. Like, same deal. Better done.
If there's anybody, by the way, I'm sure that there are some female listeners out there. Please tell me other female empowerment movies because I am grasping at straws and I don't like that I'm grasping at straws to think of
Million Dollar Baby
movies. Is it a good female empowerment movie though?
Not.
Is it still female empowerment if she gets her neck broken at the very end?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
I got a few things on my list to watch now, and that's good enough for me, Alex. And I'm glad that we got to relive our trauma of joy together.
Me too.
And I'm glad you didn't take your wife on second date to this movie instead of Hidden Figures.
We may not have made it this far.
Nope. I can see why. Is there a place on the internet where people can find you, social media? I know you're in Dear White People, so people should check that out.
Yeah, check out Dear White People. I'll be gracing your screen for half a second on the morning show this season. And nice. You can catch me on Instagram at Aalche, Aalcheh. And that's about it.
Wonderful. You can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates, both live and live streamed. If you like the podcast, please consider telling a friend or subscribing to the Blockbusting Patreon, where you get bonus episodes and access to my film library if you throw in enough scratch. And Alex, thanks again, man.
Yeah, this is great. Anytime.
This is Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.